Today is Tuesday, September 27th, 2016. Hi, it's John Williams. This is a very special edition of the Mincing Rascals. We are recording this today, the morning after the first presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Joining us as always, but on the phone this morning, is Eric Trump. Is Eric Zorn. Hi, Eric Zorn. How are you?
Many people get that wrong. Okay.
I'll bet they don't. Eric is on the phone this morning. He was up late last night. It sounds like we all were watching and covering the debate. Kristen McQuarrie and Steve Bertrand, our normal Mincing Rascals, are not able to join us. And Scott Stantis, the first off the bench for us, is in studio. Scott, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Thanks, John.
I noticed that a lot, too, last night, and I thought that it didn't have anything to do with his health. I thought that was him being nervous. That was him loading up. That was him kind of pulling himself in and pausing for a minute and thinking, oh, crap, I didn't study. What do I do now? I don't know, Scott, you started this.
Yeah, I don't think Donald Trump has those thoughts, those types of thoughts. I think he may have been doing it as a distraction. I mean,
or he's nervous.
Or he had a cold.
I would think that would be likely, don't you? These guys, of course, he doesn't shake hands with anyone, so he probably wouldn't be that. I was thinking a lot of politicians shake hands all day long, and they've got to load up on antibacterial goo all the time. But and it surprised me that they're not always sick. But it was funny to me that a lot of people online were making jokes about, well, this is clearly evidence he's got pneumonia or a brain tumor. Or
well,
something.
I thought the cocaine thing was
the cocaine addiction. I mean, that's just. I mean, but it's similar to the kinds of things they were saying about Hillary Clinton, I guess.
You know, okay.
She's unfit. So, and one of the things, just to put a bow on that, one of the things I thought Hillary Clinton showed last night, there's no doubt that she is a healthy woman in her late 60s. I mean, she was perfectly fine for that entire debate. In fact, I would argue that Donald Trump ran down a little bit.
Right. I would agree with that. I'd say that the moment where Trump questioned her stamina, he looked like he was about to drop. He'd been sniffling like crazy. You know, he was drinking like Marco Rubio. And so it was a strange moment, and her retort to that was
well,
was
we've started fine. On the peripherals here, and I don't mind that, really. We're obviously discussing the debate last night and who did what and how did they both do. I noticed that she shook his hand, and there was a question about whether or not she would do that. He was wearing a blue tie. She was wearing a red outfit, what I think Stephen Colbert called, no, Zach Galifianakis called a jumpsuit from outer space.
Yeah, she looked like Captain Ringwright from
a librarian,
Star Trek.
A librarian from outer space. But I just think every little optic nuance like that mattered at first, and the fact that she reached her hand out to him, for some people, said something. And then they got rolling. How well did Lester Holt do last night, guys?
I thought he did okay in terms of the questions he asked. He lost control of the conversation. He was not a very commanding moderator.
I thought that was okay, though. I thought because as you loosen the reins, you can see how each of these candidates performed, and you know, I think it played into both their narratives that she was in control, wonky grasp of the issues. He was just a whiny, petulant 8-year-old, and frankly, I think he did a good job. I think had he jumped in more, he would have interfered with the flow of the conversation and some of the insights that we gleaned from it.
Yeah, I'm with you, Scott. I think that the job of being a fact checker for him would have been overwhelming if he decided to do that, so he didn't. But he was good about when the question became stamina, and then Trump started to talk about looks, or the question was looks, and Trump talked about stamina. He would bring both of them back to the question that he asked, because sometimes they wouldn't want to answer it. And otherwise, I think he left them, you know, to their own devices. Hillary was smart in that the more Donald talked, the worse it got for Donald. So if that was the format, both of them back off and let him go, then so be it. That's what it was.
Now, I was writing on Deadline, so I missed all the spin room commentary right after the debate. But I understand from what I read that the Trump team was working the refs pretty hard afterwards, that they were claiming that Lester Holt was unfair to them, and that this was not not a square debate. And so
I don't know. I don't understand how they can say that. I mean, he didn't call him out. If you look at the fact checkers this morning, while Hillary may have obfuscated on her support of TPP back and forth, otherwise, pretty much everything Trump said last night that the fact checkers, or everything that the fact checkers found that was false last night, was something Trump said. If Holt was unfair to Trump last night, it could have been a lot worse.
The facts were very unfair to Trump last night.
Well, no, I think the
mic was, too. He said that the microphone, and he thinks that may have been done intentionally, his microphone was not working as well last night.
I had no trouble hearing him. So.
No, and he was double mic'd, so it's not like there, you know, I read that this morning as well. I still don't quite understand his criticism of it. Maybe it sounded him blustery and childish.
Oh. From the get-go, so the debate starts, and you know, you're just sitting there on the edge of your seat wondering everything, text, tone, how is this going to go, et cetera, et cetera. And the first question is, how will you bring back jobs? And Donald Trump says that he started out with a very small amount of money from his dad. And Hillary said, well, that was a $14 million loan. And then they talked about, and then Hillary rolls out the phrase, trumped up, trickle down. Hillary says, you have in mind an economic policy that I call trumped up, trickle down. And this all happened within the first 7 or 8 minutes. And right away, it seemed to me that trumped up, trickle down is something she and her team came up with and they were going to use. And she rolled it out right away. And right away, you could tell that he and his team didn't really plan this thing very well, because if they had, he would not have characterized $14 million from his dad as a very small amount of money.
Well, that happened
in the first 8 minutes.
Right. And he also corrected her, saying, no, it was more like a million. And I'm wondering if, A, she did that on purpose, knowing that he would, you know, jump at the bait and say, no, it was a very small loan, $1 million. Well, if I asked my dad for $1 million loan, that would not be small. First off, he'd say no. But second of all, he wouldn't have it. I mean, it also illustrated what kind of world he came up with versus, you know, everyone who says, oh, he talks like a normal person. No, he doesn't. He really isn't.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the first 20 minutes, I thought he was okay. And then apparently what little prep he had done ran out and he was done. I mean, he really was.
Well, here's a point that I think when they started talking about their personal economics, and you know, he likes to brag that he pays as few taxes as possible, and she said the only few years for which we have numbers, he didn't pay any at all. And I thought this was such a salient point, and she didn't dwell on it, but it may resonate yet. And that is, when you don't pay taxes, then you don't give any money to troops, you don't give any money to veterans, you don't give any money to schools. That's how we afford these programs. And when you brag about not paying taxes and you're a billionaire, then you're saying, I don't pay my share. Not helping.
And he pretty much admitted that he didn't pay taxes.
Right, and then he goes, that's called being smart.
Right, and I thought the point that was more telling, which happened, a little later, was when she was talking about the concession people, the people that he stiffed, and this long list of people who he has not paid their bills.
Yeah.
And he goes, that's called business.
Yeah.
Goes, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that was objectionable. The part about not paying taxes, if I may play the devil's advocate here, I don't think there's anybody on this podcast now, or probably anyone listening to it, who pays more taxes than they should, or who doesn't take advantage of all the tax laws that are out there for them, all the deductions that are available. So, you know, if we're going to be angry about that, we should be angry about a tax system that allows for someone to bring home hundreds of millions of dollars a year and not pay any taxes because of all the deductions we allow. So, I mean, you know, in some ways, it sounds like a good argument, but I mean, it's one that doesn't really resonate with me. The thing about going into bankruptcy and stiffing all these workers, I thought that really resonated. I thought that really hit home.
How did you think this played out, Eric, when he said, I'll reveal my taxes when you bring back the 30,000 email? How did you score that exchange?
I thought it was decent for him, although the thing is it takes away his sort of moral high ground on the taxes. I mean, his idea was, well, I can't release these because, you know, my accountant says I can't do it. It's, you know, and now he says, well, I will give them up if you'll, you know, they're negotiable. And so Lester Holt interjects. He says, so it's negotiable. He says, no, it's not negotiable. So he doesn't know what the word negotiable means. Well, I don't even understand that. So I thought it was a fairly good way of bringing up the email issue for him.
I wondered if she was going to do that. I mean, I don't know exactly where those email are, what their status is, but I thought, wow, okay, Donald, watch out. Be careful what you ask for. She may produce, I don't know what would be more damaging, whatever's in those email or whatever's in his taxes, but that's an intriguing question, isn't it?
Well, there's no way that he would ever do it because he would always say there's some missing or this isn't exactly 53,000.
It's not the right one.
He would game it out. So you couldn't possibly work that deal with him. So, you know, it was just a way for him to bring up that issue, and that issue does resonate with people. So it was probably smart.
What do you think about that, Scott?
Yeah, no, I agree with Eric. It was a smart move. Misdirection of saying, you know, I'll release my taxes when you release the 33 emails. I mean, it's, you know, six of one, half dozen of another. They don't compare. But on that stage last night, he made them compare. And it seemed, I think it was a decent deflection.
And it was one of the few moments that I thought where he looked like he had planned something. I mean, you're right. When you talk about the trumped up trickle down, that was clearly something that they had focus grouped and rehearsed. And I think she stuck it in at least once more, which is deadly for something like that. And you get it once and then you let other people spin it out. You don't say it again. But that was the one time where I thought, like, well, Trump has actually practiced a little something here.
Yeah, maybe, but just a little. In general, she looked like a studied politician, very smooth, very in control of the facts, and also very comfortable with that kind of format. And he simply did not. We all know he's a rookie to these sorts of things. But clearly he hadn't put in the hours that she did. And there were moments where he just kind of got lost in his train of thought or accusations. And that may work at a rally and that may work in front of your fans. But in this sort of sterile environment, it just seemed kind of bizarre. There was one moment where Hillary deadpanned, just listen to what you've heard. And everybody sort of chuckled. And I thought that spoke volumes. And then shortly thereafter, he said, when talking about something, he said, oh, I know, they were talking about cyber attacks. And he said, look at the mess we're in. It could be somebody sitting on their bed who weighs 400 pounds that did that. You know, the hacks. Excuse me, I got a call here.
Sure, it's a cold, right.
Sure.
I had to turn my mic off. But I thought,
deaf people, you know what they're saying. He has 6 months to live.
Okay, stop it. So there were a couple of moments where, like, he had to go back to the Rosie O'Donnell box and pull that thing out, and where he just couldn't resist it, and where he invented a 400-pound person. How random and odd is that, and what a mean, you know, thought that is. But he said it could be a 400-pound person who hacked into the computers, and that's it may not be a state player. It might not be Russia. We don't know.
When everybody knows the proper line is 400-pound guy on his couch in his mother's basement.
And I know. I know what he was doing. I mean, trust me, I've used that sort of metaphor before, but for him to randomly pull that out in a presidential debate when he needed a little gravitas or a little information just struck me as the sort of riff I could do on the radio or he could do at a rally, but it did not play in the debate last night.
There were things that he was saying last night that I'll bet Sarah Palin was at home smacking her head saying, this guy's incoherent. I mean, listen, I just want to read you this little paragraph. This is an answer from the transcript to this whole question of cybersecurity. So we have to get very, very tough on cyber and cyber warfare. It is a huge problem. I have a son. He's 10 years old. He has computers. He is so good with these computers. It's unbelievable. Security aspect of cyber is very, very tough, and maybe it's hardly doable.
Yeah, right.
It's like there's nothing
that was
in
him
there.
Talking. All right, so listen to this. Lou Manfredini, our Mr. Fix-It, sent me a retweet from Willie Geist, who, of course, is one of the analysts on Morning Joe. Willie Geist was actually quoting Steve Schmidt, who was a senior advisor on the McCain-Palin committee or campaign. And he said last night, Trump on foreign policy made Sarah Palin look like Henry Kissinger, which again, but you know, there were here's where I think Donald Trump looked his best and did his best and still has the most potential. When he said jobs have left Ohio and Pennsylvania and Michigan, yes. The old way of doing it doesn't work. We've got to get tough. And I thought, not that Hillary did this. She didn't make the Jobs leave Michigan, but he's putting that in her backyard, in her court, and she doesn't have an answer to that. And when he did that, I thought, oh boy, this will work, this will play. But then he got distracted by Rosie O'Donnell and 400 pounders, and he didn't double down on that.
The Miss Universe who gained weight.
Yeah, right.
He called her Miss Housekeeping because she's a Miss Housekeeper because she was Hispanic. Yeah, no, he got taken off the rails many, many times. And of course, you know, I mean, I would love to hear a serious conversation about, you know, jobs leaving this country, why they're leaving, can they really be brought back? He didn't have any answers for that. You know, there are more reasons than just offshoring that we're losing jobs, and
sure,
more than this technology.
Well, but she'll lose that argument, even if she's right, technically.
Well, right, but to her, you know, the support of NAFTA, the you know, support of other free trade agreements under the first Clinton administration, I think there's a case to be made that the family, at least, is culpable in terms of a lot of jobs moving out. I mean, what was it? Ford's small car division has announced just a week or two ago, gave a massive gift to the Trump campaign by announcing that they're moving all operations down to Mexico. I mean, that's a direct result of free trade. And I think people in Ohio, Pennsylvania, the Rust Belt states, are looking at this and going, yeah, these, you know. And Eric brings up the technological thing as well, but they don't see that. They can see if you can have a boogeyman and say, this is what's responsible. And, yeah, you can pin it to her and her husband's administration.
Well, the problem is that his only answer seems to be to start a massive trade war. You know, because if you go in and you destroy all these agreements and you slap huge tariffs onto companies that are overseas, you are going to start an enormous trade war. It's going to jack up prices like crazy in the Walmarts or the
right
places where a lot of Trump supporters shop. So, I mean, let's not kid ourselves about the impact on the economy of the kind of things he's talking about. But again, that's a substantive conversation that you're not going to hear in these debates. And if there's one thing, I do feel like with all the theatrics that we're talking about, there wasn't enough substance last night. There wasn't a lot of, here's what my plan is, here's what your plan is, here's what I like about my plan and don't like about yours, and vice versa. That kind of thing was lost in this whole personality thing, and I don't know if we're going to get past that in the next two debates.
Right, but I think Trump never has that. I mean, he doesn't come to my plan. Hillary does, and I think she was warned off of it that you're going to come off too wonkish if you go dive too deeply into the minutiae of your of governance, which is a sad commentary on us, quite frankly, but
yeah.
I think it was the right call.
I think you're right about that, Scott. For instance, in the conversation Eric's imagining where somebody says, okay, we'll put a tariff up and that will protect jobs, I think people see that. The next step is that means everything's going to be a lot more expensive at Walmart, and really your purchasing power doesn't go up anymore. That's blah, blah, blah to them. I don't think that next, you know, sort of iteration of the conversation even registers. And if I were Trump, I mean, really, you've got to believe that Ivanka or somebody is pulling him aside and saying, okay, that was you just, you know, shooting from the hip. Now we're going to sit down and we're going to study for these next two October debates.
That's what everyone is saying. I don't believe it for a moment.
I don't believe they're going to do it, but this ought to be the moment for people in the GOP that is identical to the moment that Democrats had in 2012 after that first debate between Obama and Romney. Remember when Obama had that terrible debate in Las Vegas?
And it was the first one, right?
It was Denver.
Was it Denver? Okay, yeah, that's right.
They blamed the altitude.
Yeah, and he was flat, and he didn't bring up like the 47%, and everyone, and you know, I just remember hearing Democrats on the talk shows just tearing their hair out about this, like, this is terrible. He got pounded in the post debate polls the same way that Trump got pounded last night. I mean, it was a wipeout. And the thing is, the Democrats seemed to realize it and realize they had to regroup. I'm seeing a lot of Republicans going, well, no, that was fine. We think Trump. There's a hashtag on Twitter, Trump won. I mean, that's just delusional. That doesn't help, I don't think. I mean, you're not going to rally the troops saying Trump won when he clearly lost.
Well, so many of the touchstones of this campaign were covered last night, right? Her stamina and health, his tax records, his, you know, unflattering comments about women or other groups. And so I think we've already, so we've done that one. Now, the second and third debates, I'm not exactly sure what the subjects are that they're going to cover. But, Scott, I've got to believe at some point they're going to delve a little more into the nuances of these things.
That could happen in the third debate, which is going to be the round table, you know, where they sit down. The next debate's going to be fascinating, particularly given that the guy who announced as he was practically screaming and having a meltdown that he has the temperament to be president, it's the town hall format. Now, if you look at this campaign, Donald Trump has not had to go through a town hall meeting before where he's questioned strongly by people who may or may not agree with him. It's that, and if he jumps down the throat of some poor mother of a vet or something, then you know it's going to be game over.
Well, how do you think this plays out? Because he said last night, I could say some very bad things, but I won't tonight.
What was that?
That was an 8-year-old saying, I'll say something about my big sister. I know about her, but I'm not going to say it.
Okay, but he did that. So what do you think he's referring to?
I'm guessing he's referring to Bill Clinton's extramarital affairs.
Right, yeah. Of course.
I mean, he threatened to put Jennifer Flowers in the front seat, the woman who purportedly had a 12-year affair with Hillary's husband. So that's, you know... that's kind of what I was thinking he's referencing too. And I guess the question then is, how does that play? How does that play? Does that, say he goes down that road, does that score him some points, guys?
Oh, I think it loses him points. I mean, the thing is, they're both wooing these people who are on the fence. And I think the people who are on the fence are not necessarily on the fence between them, but between them and third-party candidates. And those are the people who I think they're trying to reach or they need to reach in this debate, because that's, you know, right now, but you know, any of the polls have them both in the like mid-40s, right? So, you know, it goes up and down, but someone's got to seize enough to get, you know, closer to 50, and they have to take them probably not from each other, but from the third party candidates.
The plus and minus for both candidates, Hillary needed to plant, she did something very smart. There's still enough time where you can plant seeds, that's what I call it, and that is seeds of doubt, seeds of discontent for the other candidate, and you build on, people can stew on them for a few days and they start to bloom, and it has the necessary effect. But I want to make a point here. I mean, for all of the stumble bumble fumbles we attribute to Trump for this podcast, for the length of this recording, we've talked about Trump probably 80% of the time.
Well, what about that?
I think that tells you something about this campaign, about what he does when he walks in a room. There's something charismatic, and whatever it is, we pay attention. And we talk about it more than we talked about when he was running in the primaries. There are certainly more qualified candidates, but we always talked about what he did during the debates, and we're doing it now, what he did the debate with Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, but I'm wondering then if that suggests that we're not focusing on the right thing, or we're not being fair in our analysis of the situation.
Well, part of it is that, you know, she's a conventional politician at the end of the day. I think Scott pointed out earlier that, you know, they had that odd split screen format where you had to look at, it wasn't like they focused on one thing or the other. They were both on screen the whole time, which I don't really care for that.
No, I didn't either.
But I guess that's the way they catch people drinking and sniffing and sighing and interrupting and so on. But, you know, I thought she was very controlled. I thought, you know, the expression on her face for the most part was normal and amused most of the time, the things Trump was saying. She didn't look rattled. She didn't make a face. She didn't roll her eyes. She was really controlled. That was a professional debate.
I think in the words of Barack Obama, she was likable enough. I mean, that last night was as likable she's going to get, and it was likable enough. I thought she did herself a lot of favors last night in a very subtle, nuanced way, which, you know, obviously we don't live in that atmosphere anymore, unfortunately. But
well, I missed it, though. You know, Scott, my guess was that Trump was going to, remember originally he addressed her as Secretary Clinton, and I thought he was going to sort of, Eric, you and I talked about this in the last podcast, do the version of Donald Trump that reads from the teleprompter, speaks in more measured sentences, is a little less rattled. And while he tried to start out that way, he just lost it. I don't know then if in the second debate he goes back to that and tries to do that, or if he just says, ah, hell, I'm Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think he does. I mean, it's going to be in front of it's a town hall format, so he's going to try to win the audience, and the way he tries to win the audience is with, you know, juvenile jokes and insults.
I'm dying to know what Kellyanne Conway, his campaign manager, is telling him behind closed doors. I know what she's saying in the media. She's spinning it as a real positive, real success for him, but I'll bet you behind closed doors, she's very concerned about the way he came off last night. And especially, you're right, John, he started off nice. He said, may I call you secretary? I want to make you happy. And he was being very deferential. And by the end, he's questioning her stamina, which is, I think, just a complete, you know, code word for sexism. I mean, that's just an appalling thing to say. And,
I disagree with that. I think if you would do that with, Bob Dole, that was always a question with him. And his health issues.
But nobody ever brought that up with Bob Dole or John McCain. John McCain had cancer twice. Bob Dole was a disabled war veteran. Nobody would dare bring that up. And yet he just clearly, and I think it's clearly playing
well,
the woman card.
No, to say that it's sexist, that's simply not true. In 1984, in fact, the best line from that debate was Reagan addressing the health and the age issue. It's not that it doesn't come up with guys. That's
hogwash.
That was
hogwash. The moderator who
it doesn't matter who brought it up. It's still hogwash.
It's an issue.
It's hogwash to call. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, so Reagan just we're like Trump and Clinton interrupting each other. No, in that debate, the moderator asked Reagan about the age issue, and he had that great answer. I'm not going to make my opponent's youth and inexperience an issue in this campaign. And everybody, including Walter Mondale, laughed, and they moved on. This was a real hostile attack from him.
Well, the whole thing was played out that way. You know, this is the last thing I'll offer you guys, and that is that I didn't even like the way it was promoted. At Hofstra University, they had cheerleaders and the pep band out front. And one of the CNN anchors I saw beforehand said, wow, this is fun. 100 million people are going to be watching. The promos that preceded it on ABC, for instance, showed grainy images of them barking and yelling at each other. And even at the beginning opening montages that the networks ran, it was very much like Monday Night Football or the Friday night fights. And I just thought, shit, this is so important what we're talking about here. Could somebody please dial down the theatrics?
I couldn't agree more. And frankly, I wish they didn't have an audience. I really do.
I totally agree. And I hate the town hall format even more than the audience format. I think it plays into, you know, strange questions. It's almost always a train wreck, the town hall format. So I think no audience, just the two of them and a moderator and a switch so they can turn the microphone off and they run out of time.
All right, this concludes our debate. You each have 20 seconds left for a closing comment. Eric Zorn, your final thoughts.
I would like you to read my columns on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays in the Tribune, and always look for Scott Stannis's cartoons, even when they are not correct.
Scott Stantis, your final thoughts.
I would like you to look at my cartoons at chicagotribune.com/Stantis and listen to my podcast at WGN Plus. And I also encourage you strongly to read my friend Eric Zorn's columns, even when they are nonsense.
Well, it's funny. I was looking for some substance, and you boys both turned this into self-serving plugs for your own world, which is...
And don't forget to buy those Zorn steaks.
And while we are not on this Saturday, at least the John Williams Show from 1 to 3, that means that this podcast will not be broadcast there. Its normal radio home is Saturdays at 1:30 during my weekend shift on WGN. Mr. Stantis, always a pleasure. We'll look for your editorial cartoons at Chicago Tribune and chicagotribune.com. And we always appreciate your filling in on various shows here on WGN Radio.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, same to you, Mr. Zorn. We'll check you out at chicagotribune.com/Zorn.
Great. Thanks.
And thanks to our producer of The Mincing Rascals, that's one Kristen Decker, and to our engineer, listen to that crowd, Bob Ferguson.
Little rascal, you. You little rascal, you. You little rascal, you.